Welcome to Growing Pains, a business podcast for entrepreneurs and their teams who find themselves in the growth phase or messy middle in between startup and aiming for six or seven figures and beyond. I'm your host, Laurie Sterling, a COO, coach and mentor. I both do what I teach and teach what I do with a passion for empathetic team leadership, business operations and all things entrepreneurship. Hey, today I'm with Sam, who is a certified digital business manager and systems educator. After starting her virtual assistant business first, armed with a biochemistry degree and a total of zero experience in digital marketing, it was safe to say she felt a little over her head. So fast forward to working with over 20 clients, tackling everything from copywriting to managing over 20 member masterminds, she realized that we business owners all have something in common when it comes to getting our ish together. Your brain's fried trying to do it all, but you also don't know where to start when it comes to fixing it. It turns out you don't need a team of 20 or the most expensive tools on the market to feel organized and proactive in your biz. You really just need a few simple processes that make it easy to track tasks, start working with clients, and build your dream team. I couldn't agree more, Sam. Tell me more. Yeah, I'm so intrigued by this biochemistry degree, and then you ended up in digital marketing. How did that happen?
Yeah, I never thought I would have been here either. It was definitely not in the plan at all. But after I graduated with a biochemistry degree, the plan originally was to, you know, go to graduate school, potentially, you know, maybe go to med school or physician's assistant or something like that. And I just didn't want to. I had so much resistance around like taking the test and applying. And I grew up in a very like traditional working family. So everyone in my family is like very educated, but very traditional jobs. So I didn't even know this world existed at all, this online business world, entrepreneur, world. Yeah. And I really wanted to travel after I graduated. So I just told myself, I'll take a year and just go travel. And then after that, I'll like come back and apply to school. And one of my friends at the time happened to get accepted to a master's program in Barcelona, Spain. And she said, hey, you can, you know, come live in Spain with me if you want. And I said, sure, why not?
Nice.
I'll go. Yeah. And so yeah, I went over to Barcelona. I started teaching English online as a part-time job, and I was very broke and very bored. I did not like teaching English and I wasn't really making that much money. So I went down a rabbit hole of how to make money when you're living abroad and you can't work, you don't have a work visa, and yeah, and you're broke. And so that's how I found the virtual assisting world. And I found a course and just said, okay, I'm just going to spend my last $400 on this course and give it a go. Like I have nothing else to do. So yeah, I started working. Mm-hmm. And I worked online I worked basically for free for like 6 months, just really building the skills because I did feel like I was pretty behind since I had no experience in business or marketing at all. And then, yeah, after 6 months, I got my first like retainer client. And yeah, then from there, I started just applying for more clients and just building up my business and learning as much as possible and basically doing every single task that I could get my hands on to, you know, figure out what I can.
Yeah, and like here I am. Being a bit of a generalist, doing a bit of everything sort of thing.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely did that for like my first, you know, year to 2 years. I did take my digital business manager training pretty early on within the first year of becoming a virtual assistant, but I still was in that mindset of, okay, I need to, you know, do as many tasks, like as much, get as much experience as I can so I can, you know, help my clients and feel confident.
And so how long have you been an OBM for now?
About, I would say full time, about a year and a half. So I would say I got my first real like full OBM job about a year and a half after starting my business.
Gotcha. Okay. So who do you typically serve?
I typically work for coaches and course creators. And now I also work with a lot of solopreneurs. That's kind of where my offers start. I typically work with someone when they have really started growing their business and they might have, you know, maybe a small, you know, social media management team or a video editing team, but they're not really sure where to grow from there. they just know that they're super like overwhelmed with everything. And they just, yeah, they have no idea where to start when it comes to, you know, who to hire, who's going to be the best hire for them, mm-hmm. and just how to build like those automations and systems that are really going to work for them and their business.
Very important. And so how many clients do you currently have?
I currently have 3. So I actually just finished with 2 of my clients last month. And my goal is to move into a more COO role with just 1 or 2 clients. So I am currently starting to do that now.
Very good. And how many hours per week do you typically work?
I work around 30, I would say, between 25 and 30. Yeah.
So per client, what does that average out to?
Well, 1 client, I work around 10 to 15 just for her. She's my biggest retainer client. And then the other 2, I work around 5 for them. And then I try to work around 5 for my own business as well. But as you know, sometimes client work, it gets in the way of that.
I know. So do you mind sharing what your starting retainers are or your hourly rate style? How do you charge?
Now I charge with just like a retainer. So I do say in my retainer, you know, up to 20 hours a month or something. And that retainer starts at $2,000. So around $100 an hour. And then for my biggest client, she has me on retainer for around $5,000. But I also do some coaching with her as well with some of her clients. So we have a much more broad retainer than just OBM services. But yeah, it's been super fun getting to kind of step into that role as well.
Yeah, it's actually not unusual for an OBM to get pulled into the coaching side when it comes to their clients' businesses as well. It's happened to me plenty of times, and yeah, it's not uncommon. It gives like that extra level of like diversity in the role too.
Yeah, no, I've really been enjoying it since I stepped into the role. And I think it's also made me a better OBM just because I have gotten to talk to so many more business owners than I would have just, you know, working one-on-one with clients. Like I'm a coach for a mastermind with over 20 people in it. And so just hearing their questions, helping them, you know, a little bit one-on-one here and there has given me such a, you know, different view on how to handle and approach my clients with as they grow their businesses.
Love it. So how many team members do you manage in total?
I think team-wise, I would say between 20 and 25, counting some. We do have some, you know, contracted teams that I don't have to manage fully. I guess one of my clients has a sales team and they kind of manage themselves, but I am the communication point between them and my clients. So
I'm going to come back to that question.
Yeah.
We'll dive a bit deeper in a moment, but can you tell me how many hours per week your clients usually work? Does that?
Yeah, I would say most of my clients work around 3 to 4 hours a day. I think that's their goal. So around 20 hours a week.
Yeah.
But it definitely depends on the weeks. I think some weeks, obviously, they work a bit less. Some weeks they work a bit more, depending on launches.
Yeah, launches and, you know,
all the things.
Exactly.
Yeah. Launches where everyone just works 50 hours and no one talks about it.
It's true. But it totally depends on the organization of like being prepared, like the preparation coming up to the launch. So I've been in some launches where it's real easy, slow, like just turning up on socials when they need to. And that's about it because all the hard work has already been done. But then there are others that are like writing emails last minute, writing social posts last minute, and it can be chaotic. And I've experienced that with the same client, both an organized one and a disorganized one, just because of maybe like they've been on holidays for during the build up period of getting the pre-launch period. Exactly. So it's so true. So what have you found from your seat watching your clients has been the catalyst for their growth in their business? Like when they've had jumps in their income?
Yeah. Something I've been seeing a lot lately with my clients is really focusing on one, you know, main offer and getting that as streamlined and systemized as possible. So with one of my clients, she has a mastermind and we recently turned it evergreen and we made like the entire onboarding process like completely automated. Mm-hmm. And it's just been so much easier. And for her, I think to sell it because it's so much easier for the team as well. Like we don't really have to do anything besides just like a little check-in here and there. So that's something that I think has been helping a lot of my clients. And then the other thing is just making sure they're very, very clear on like their customer journey and how they are serving their customers at each point during their journey. So how they're serving like the beginning of that journey. So whether the customer has like no idea about them, but providing some sort of, you know, resource for them and getting them into their world as quickly as possible. And then just continuing to show up and, you know, deliver value. And yeah, that's really, I think, the best way to keep customers in your world as long as possible. And then whenever you do have launches, to, you know, really blow the launch out of the park because you have so many people just like ready to buy from you.
Nice. It hasn't been a negative impact for your role. It's actually been positive in that there's been less work for you to do because you've been organized with the onboarding process.
Yeah, I think something that's really helped me with handling all of those onboarding processes and everything is really getting very, very clear on the process before even touching a single tool. So, you know, getting super clear with my client, what steps exactly does each person need to go through whenever they're being onboarded, laying that out, and then looking at the tools and saying, okay, how can we make sure this person is, you know, getting their contract right after they pay? Okay, we need to set up a Zap. Like that can be automated. Make sure they automate the welcome email. What are we putting in the welcome email? They need to have this onboarding form. You know, it's just all of those little steps, outlining that completely up front has made things so much easier just to go back in and see where things are automated, what's missing as well. And because I think that's been a big thing with onboarding is a lot of times it's a client will come back and be like, oh, well, now we also need to do this. Or, you know, I also want to add in this piece of it as well. Can you check in with this person? They didn't do this. So adding in like reminders and stuff as well. And a touch point for all of those clients.
Nice. So going back to the team thing, what have you found being the hardest part about managing a growing team?
I think the hardest part for me personally, because I was a VA for when I started out, is really stepping out of the VA work a lot of the time and delegating that. I think a lot of CEOs have this as well when they start hiring. It's just that, well, I can do it. I can do it better, quote unquote, yes. Or I can do it faster. I already know how to do it. And as the team grows, that's what we are hiring for. Like, because I don't need to be doing everything. I need to be helping the CEO. So just because I can do it does not mean I should be doing it. Just like, you know, just because the CEO can manage a business does not mean they should be doing that either.
Yeah.
So that's definitely been the most difficult, is like really drawing a line with myself and saying, okay, no, you need to delegate this task and let someone else do it. Even if they ask you questions about it, or, you know, even if you have to create an entire SOP just to delegate it, it's just what has to be done.
Yeah, for sure. And have you found that there's like any mind shift changes that have had to happen to do that?
Yeah, I think definitely stepping into more of a leadership role and learning how to communicate, which this is something I'm still really working on, is learning how to communicate like a COO or like a leader in the organization. So not just delegating the task, but tying the task back to the big vision of the business and, you know, what's our big goal. And this task is very important because of, you know, our goal is to get 20 people in this mastermind, or, you know, whatever it is, and making sure the team is all on the same page with that.
Yes.
Because once you are kind of the buffer between the team and the CEO, then it does fall on you to communicate all of those visions and dreams and goals. And so that's definitely been a huge mindset shift for me as well.
Love it. I know something that may help with that.
I'm really looking forward to something at the beginning of the year. So.
Yes, I'll tell you about it later.
Yeah.
So what would you say has been the highlight, the best part of working with a growing team?
I think definitely seeing the actual growth, because with one of my clients, I've been with her for almost 2 years now, and she just had her first 70K month this a few months ago. And so it's like seeing her go from 20K to 30K to 70K months. And it just feels like all of our hard work is paying off, even though for so many months we were like you know, at the drawing board, redoing everything and trying different things, trying different launches that just weren't working out. So yeah, just seeing all the pieces click together in an actual puzzle and things just start to work out. And it feels very fulfilling for me to be a part of that because I'm just, you know, I've seen it all happen with her.
Yeah, it's funny. Like when you're seeing it from that angle, quite often it's like there's all the pieces have to click together and there's always something that goes wrong every launch. You know,
yeah,
an email went out to the wrong people or something like that, or the wrong link went out or something like that. So like when you get to an end of the launch and even when there's been like the odd one or two things go wrong and it's still been your biggest launch ever, it's like, wow, that means if it all did go right, then the next time's going to be even better. And it just gets you like so excited. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that's been really exciting as well with seeing the business grow as it's growing and growing it also so sustainably that it, to me, it's like anything is possible. Like, okay, 100K months, like easy, we got this type of thing. And that makes me feel confident in my business and also just expands my own, you know, possibilities in my mind.
Love it. So what advice would you give an entrepreneur who wants to hire their first COO?
I would say, first of all, just be very, I think one thing whenever I work with CEOs that it doesn't bother me, but it's just kind of one of my pet peeves is when the CEO is not ready to have a COO. They're not really ready to delegate things. They're not really ready to let go of their responsibility. And I think that is, you know, part of the CEO mindset of like, I can do this myself. Like they still want to have a hand in every single thing and kind of micromanage, which I understand it is very, very hard to let go of your business. Your business is your baby, something you've worked really hard on. So I think just having that level of trust with the COO. So making sure you have that level of trust throughout the interview and, you know, throughout when you're hiring process, whatever that is. Feeling very comfortable letting go of some things and whether it's just small things at first and it's like little tests. Okay, cool. But just having like a process in place and being prepared for that mindset shift, I think will help a lot of CEOs.
Yeah, I definitely find that it's a mindset shift. It's also like making sure that you're ready, like as a CEO is ready to come to terms with their workload being reduced and not feeling
that's a huge one.
Yeah. And
not feeling that like busyness all the time.
Yes. And like maybe putting your attention elsewhere, or sometimes it's like that superhero where something's wrong in the business, so I'm going to come in and save it. And you feel like a hero where you could actually just be getting in the way of your team who've already got a system to deal with it. Oh, yes.
Yeah. And it's funny. Yeah, you can definitely see it. And I think it's funny because my clients, some still do that now. Like they still have that, this almost like mindset of if they're not in their business every day, if they're, you know, they're texting me like, I'm not going to be on Slack for the few hours in the morning. And I'm like, that's fine. Like, we don't really need you here. And not in a mean way, like we don't need you in this business, but this is why you've hired a team, is so you can take a morning off Slack and things still get done.
Absolutely.
So yeah, but I think that comes over time and with trust and, you know, just seeing that we don't need you 24/7. The team is okay.
Yeah.
The business is still going.
I get it. It can be hard, but it's all okay. So what advice would you give an OBM or COO who works side by side with a CEO?
To just be very patient and I guess just give the CEO space to, you know, have their moments. I think with CEOs, a lot of times they are such a visionary role and a lot of CEOs I work with are very like action oriented. Like they have an idea and they like want to start working on it and they're like, okay, this is the idea. And I think a role of a COO is also to bring it full circle and say, okay, I mean, that's a great idea. Maybe we can do that, but we're also doing these other five things. So we kind of have to pick. And I think patience is a huge key of that because sometimes I've noticed CEOs, they just need some space to like run with their idea, to think about it for a few days and then realize themselves like, oh, actually, this isn't really what I want to be doing for the business. Like, I still want to be doing, you know, thing A, not this thing B.
Yeah. So it's like that communication piece. It's important to be clear on what resources are available to put behind that new idea, but also, like, it's almost like humoring them. Like, all right, let's play this out.
That's a good way to put it. It's just like, I'll just be like, okay, yeah, like, let's see, like, I'll put together a little plan for this. And then in my mind, I know, like, this is not going to happen this much, but you know, but then once they see the plan and they see, the resources, and then they say, oh yeah, you know, never mind, scratch that. Let's just stay focused on one thing. Yeah, so I think just, you know, not freaking out whenever that kind of stuff happens and taking it like super, super seriously and be like, oh my God, we have to do it this month now. But having some space and some patience to just let your CEOs be CEOs.
Like, that's right. It's what I like to call them, happy grenades. Like, they're all excited and this wonderful, and it just turns the team upside down for that.
And everyone's like,
good. Yeah. yes, let's keep that in mind, everyone. Yeah. So what is next for you, your dreams, your goals, your vision?
Yeah, I think my big goal is to eventually work mostly full-time for one client and really step into that COO role for, you know, a very, like, a growing business. And then on the side, I would love to have, like, resources and for solopreneurs who are starting their own businesses and who, you know, they can't afford an OBM yet. They really have no idea where to start, but they, you know, and they're not really comfortable hiring a VA or someone more long-term to help them. So I would love to have templates and potentially, like, a group program or a course just for them, so they can start setting up systems and start organizing their business and automating things by themselves. Because, you know, you don't need an MBA to be doing this. And you really only need, you can do everything by yourself up to a certain point. I truly think that, until you can't afford, you know, an OBM or a COO.
Yeah. So I am, interestingly enough, going to be interviewing one of your CEOs in the coming weeks. So,
are you? That's exciting.
Yes, I am. But I'd be interested, like, perhaps in like a year's time or so, maybe we follow up and see your journey and what's happened.
Yeah, I would love that. That would be super fun.
Great. So tell us, how can people follow you and your journey?
Yeah, I am mostly on Instagram. My handle is at SamWizz. It's SamWhizzz. And yeah, that's where you can find me most of the time. I'm also on TikTok, but I'm not very active on there. So
no worries. We'll put that in the show notes.
yeah, perfect. Yeah. And then I also have a free roadmap for solopreneurs if you are interested in setting up any systems in your business, and you can find that. I can give you a link, or you can find it in my Instagram file as well.
Brilliant. That would be great. Thank you. So thank you to everyone else for listening as well. And thank you, Sam, for joining me today. If you are an OBM and you would love to level up your skills in COO leadership, decision-making, strategic management skills, and the communication side, please reach out to me by email or social media. You can find the links in the show notes for a prospectus on my 8-week digital COO accelerator program. So until next time.
Super excited for that.
Thank you. Yeah. So everyone, have a productive day, and thank you for joining us.
Yeah. Thank you, Laurie.